I'm Ken Husbands, the one and only. Up next, we bring you For the Health of It. And to introduce that big show of health, let's say good evening to Jason Bell.
I had a big, wonderful, bountiful meal of broccoli this evening, Ken. And I feel great.
That's
feel
rabbit so food. Healthy. You eat that rabbit food, boy. You can get the wing and blow you down.
Every so often, you have to give the body a chance with a plant-based ordeal, you know. And so, therefore, I am determined to live and love for the health of it.
But listen,
for the health of it begins with loving your own body, not so.
As my grandmother would say, that girl truly put you by the net.
I will neither confirm nor deny that allegation. And as a matter of fact, I will go ahead and deny that allegation as I'm saying goodnight to Trudy Griffith, president of the Diabetes Association of Barbados. Good night, Trudy.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, Ken. Good evening, Barbados.
Good evening. And your guests are with you?
Yes, our guests are with us. And we have Dr. Paula Michelle Lashley, who is one of our consultant pediatricians at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And she also lectures at the University of the West Indies Case Hill Campus in the Faculty of Medical Sciences. And we are joined this evening by Mrs. Donna Hull-Hawk. And I'll let her introduce herself because this is her first time on For the Health of It.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Donna Tull Cox, and because some people mix me up with another something Cox, I will just like to be called Miss Donna. Make it easy for everyone. I'm a guidance counselor. I am also a parent of a young man. You know, I have to call him a young man now because he's 16 years old, who's a type 1 diabetic. So, I've had lots of experience in dealing with young people even before he was born and before he had diabetes. So I'm one of these go-to people when in the 11th hour when you want to know what the heck is going on with your kids. So I'm glad to be here tonight and willing to share whatever knowledge I have with you and the rest of Barbados.
Of course, Barbados, we invite you to call and speak to Dr. Michelle or Miss Donna or Trudy or even myself, Jason Bell, by calling 434-1790. I was thinking about the advertising number since I'm always concerned with advertising, since that's my substantive role at Starcom. But we also invite you to WhatsApp us, 266-IVOB, 266-4862. And Miss Donna, thank you once again for being so willing to share your experience. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Michelle, we are so happy to have you back again to provide that expertise from a medical standpoint. But Miss Trudy, I'll get out of your way and let you lead the conversation.
Okay. So last week we started our conversation on diabetes and puberty. And it's not that the two necessarily go hand in hand for every child out there. Every child may or may not go through puberty, and Dr. Michelle would have gone through that last week. But certainly we do have a cohort of young persons out there who are going through puberty and they are living with type 1 diabetes. So lastly, Dr. Michelle would have shared with us what puberty is, what are the changes that the body will go through, and perhaps some of the emotional roller coasters that our children will face as they go through that transitional phase. So one of the things that I want to look at this week is really and truly from a less physical or physiological perspective in terms of what is going through the child's head, what goes on in their social network, and so on. So it's quite interesting that we have Dr. Michelle with us as well as Ms. Donna. So last week when we closed the episode, we were talking about parenting styles. So, Ms. Donna, can you please share with us some of what you know, what you've experienced in terms of parenting styles during that phase of puberty?
Okay, well, with respect to parenting styles, we've got several. The one that a lot of parents tend to resort to, it seems as though, is more laissez-faire style, where they feel as though, you know, let the child do what they want to do. Everything's fine. I'm the child's friend. And with that, they don't really particularly hold up the boundaries that need to be held up. They don't really expect the child to be responsible for their actions and even for their feelings at times. So you will find that in a case like that, children tend to, as we say in Barbados, try to get away with murder. And usually, once they try that, the parent will back them up. Okay? It's a style that is, it's not very good for letting someone actually understand what their rights and responsibilities are as they grow older. Then you've got the authoritarian parent, basically, you know, a very strict parent. Do as I tell you to do. So in the case where you've got, you know, your child growing into a teen, into a young adult, they're very rigid in their rules and responsibilities. And you would hear those parents saying stuff like, you think you're a man in here? Well, I am the man in here. Or you think you're more woman than me? And they usually have a very, it's a, either my way or the highway attitude. And a lot of the times, those teenagers either will conform with, you know, extreme obedience, or they're the ones that are said to be really defiant and hard to quote-unquote control. One of the problems I find with having those type of extremely strict parents where extreme obedience is the catchphrase, is that when you learn how to be obedient without asking questions of your parents, you also learn to be obedient without asking questions of anybody else. And that's not always a good thing for our youngsters, especially today. Then you've got the parent who's a bit more balanced, where there is a give and take, where there is a vision for the child, and where they help and nurture the child to grow into their full potential as adults. Because our children are not going to be small forever. And it is our responsibility to get them from that childhood stage, from babyhood all the way up to an adult who is capable of handling themselves in any situation, who is independent, and who eventually, and I know this sounds less than altruistic, is going to parent us as we get to our second childhood. So those are the kind of parents that we do have out there. And obviously, there'll be the ones that are linked on the in between those extreme areas. But those are the parents that we have. And depending on your particular style, your temporary insanity called childhood adolescence will either be easily coped with or one of the most difficult experiences of your life. And if you have more than one child growing into adolescence, you can be having some serious issues questioning yourself all the time. So so that's basically parenting stuff in a nutshell.
Okay.
Sounds really simple. Gosh, my head just started hurting thinking about all these possibilities.
Well, I see them all the time.
Oh, that's it.
Okay, so yeah. Donna, let's switch over to you for a moment, because Donna has just explained to us a couple of parenting styles and how that can have an impact on not only the adolescent going through puberty, but how that will potentially follow them into adulthood. Can you make any projections in terms of how those parenting styles will have an impact on a child with diabetes and their blood sugar control, not just in the short term, but in the long term as well?
Yes, Trudy. And hi, Donna. It's good to hear you.
I will see you again soon, too.
But yes, I quite agree with the type of parenting styles that Donna spoke about, because we see all varieties. Now, the ones that are the more permissive parents allow the child to do what they want, they get the world pulled over their eyes so much that sometimes they don't realize things are going wrong until they are very wrong. And these children can be quite manipulative from the quite young until they get older and realize that they have to do things for themselves. I don't want to scare anyone, but the long and short of it is that the both extremes really do not work out very well for blood sugar control either way. Because the parent that is so strict that tries to have the child under control, what a lot of these teens do is they start to hide things from them. Mm-hmm. And they will show them, and just for people who don't know, diabetics will often have to write out their logs, like put the information in a separate book. And they will show the parents perfect numbers in a book. But when the actual device is downloaded or seen, you realize that it doesn't correlate at all, at all, at all. Or they'll do it extreme, not write anything down and say they forgot, but everything's great. So just so that they don't get conflict with them, or that they themselves are trying to get to the next level. And it is quite important that no matter what parenting style they have, I was having a look at some documents earlier today, and it talks about one very, very important thing about talking with your child. So even with the permissive parent or the strict parent, what the strict parent does is tends to talk at them, give them orders. And the permissive parent kind of waits for the child to tell them what they want them to hear. But if we talk with them, we are bringing them back to the level that we want them to be in. We're kind of validating what they may be thinking or saying and trying to make them feel normal at the same time when we talk with them. It's extremely frustrating for an adolescent to think that they have to do something different than their peers. And we need to give the children the opportunity to be able to understand that it's normal to feel that frustration. It's normal to not do the right things when you're upset or and forget something because you don't want to look like you're doing something different than the others. And that kind of validation builds up strength in the children and allows them then to navigate all the day-to-day rigors dealing with this chronic illness that's not going away. There was a very interesting fact that I saw today, and I think it kind of gives you perspective about parenting. Two groups of parents, one with type 1 diabetes or diabetes, and another set of parents with a child who had something devastating like a cancer. Both parents are very stressed, trying to get to the better of it. They themselves are in trouble because we're talking about the parents now, not only the children. Mm-hmm. As the cancer treatments go on, the parents get less stressed. Maybe the child is getting better. Maybe they've gone into remission. They get less stressed. With a child with diabetes, as they get older, the parents are getting more stressed. Because what's happening now is that the normal physiological responses and behavioral issues that happen in the normal child then come out in addition to their diagnoses. And it's parents themselves who need the help too. And it's not just only the impact on the child, Trudy. So I think what we have to understand here, that's a two-way street, that the parents do need some help themselves. And you have to be a really, really strong parent like Donna to understand that this is affecting you yourself. And if you have other children, how do you divide up your time between your other children and this child who has all of these special needs? You give her less or more, and it's a significant impact. And we have to talk to the parents themselves and look at how well they're feeling. So exactly. I'm going to hold back a little bit and let Donna see how she feels about that context.
Well, I wanted to add something to what you were saying, Dr. Lashley, because a lot of parents, when it comes to maybe like a cancer, they see it as something that's really out of their control, and they... You know, they just turn everything over to the doctors and they will feel sad. But I found that with a lot of parents of children with the diabetes, they almost felt guilty as though they somehow had something to do with the child getting diabetes or something that their spouse or the child's other parent had to do with them getting diabetes. And sometimes what will happen is in their guilt, they would then try to give the child whatever they can give them, almost to say, I'm sorry. And they don't realize it until they are facing the realization that the child is not doing what they're supposed to be doing because they are being manipulative. And they are also draining the parent of resources, a lot of resources, resource of time, resource of energy, resource of attention, away from not only the other children, but from themselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something else we have to look at as well. The whole guilt syndrome. Me personally, I did not have much of that in this particular family setting. We tend to be very pragmatic, and my son is the most pragmatic of all. And I keep saying that if anybody in the family had to get this particular condition, he's the one that will be able to handle it much better than me.
He's a very logical, pragmatic kind of child.
Very, very, very much so. I'm terrified of needles. He doesn't like needles, but he knows that he has to take sometimes as much as 4 shots a day.
Right.
And he will not question it. I have to do it. It's got to be done. Boom, it's done.
Do you mind us asking when he was diagnosed?
At the age of 14.
Oh, so right smack dab in the middle of that whole puberty process. All the other changes happening in his body, and bang, he's also diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
Exactly. And everything that he was saying prior to his ketoacidosis situation, I said, you're having growing pains. My legs were growing pains. Everything is growing pains. And he was actually giving us hints, you know, prior to the diagnosis and prior to his getting ill. But the key thing here is this. Parenting does not simply start at a stage or at a crisis. Parenting starts from the time that child is forming in you. And you've got to address all of that from the very beginning. So when we had to deal with this crisis, we were able to deal with it because we had been exercising certain parenting skills all along. And that's the key to it, right? You've got to be practicing a lot of these parenting skills all along. Most of the time, you need to get help with it. I'm not going to say I'm a genius or anything like that. I got help from very early in parenting because I recognize that, you know, these children look up at manuals. I have never seen any hospital say, here's a child, get in the wheelchair, or here is this book on parenting. Or here's the manual for your child. Right?
Well, some may argue their principles are universal. I've heard my mother say this. Good night, Mom. There is no manual for how to raise a Jason. You know, you kind of learn it as you go along and kind of white-knuckle it and hope for the best. But we are continuing to win the hearts of the fathers towards the children and the children towards the fathers here on For the Health of It in association with the Diabetes Association of Barbados. I'm Jason Bell. The last voice you just heard is Donna Toe Cox, and she is...
Miss Donna for Jason.
Pardon? Miss Donna, yes.
Miss Donna for Jason.
Miss Donna for me and the rest of the panel and for you.
And I wonder what is for me, please.
You can have Ms. Donna as well.
Well, thank you very kindly. I was thinking that
every honorific for him. Anyway.
Ms. Donna?
Yeah.
They were trying to make a manual to raise children and to rear children, but haven't met with the likes of Jason Bell. They had to abjure the decision.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I would
didn't have enough
that.
Paper.
I would concur
with it. Jason, you broke the mold.
Yeah,
broke them
all. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
So,
you
just answered my question there, and thank you so much. So, Trudy, back over to you.
Right. So, I just want to ask a question, and I know both Donna, you can answer, as well as Dr. Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have some children who are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes before puberty.
Right.
And we have those who are diagnosed during puberty and some who are even diagnosed after puberty. So how do you find children tend to respond to that diagnosis in terms of being normal? If they're diagnosed before puberty, do they enter puberty and just continue? Or do they change? And for those who are diagnosed during puberty, how do they respond? How do they react? What's their concept of normal? Because everybody wants to be like everybody else. But obviously, with your diagnosis of diabetes, you are certainly quite different.
Right. From the... Well, I can tell you about my experience with my son. before the diagnosis, he thought he was pretty normal, although he realized that some of his friends seemed to be getting taller a little faster than he was. And he was always on the slim side, very slim side, which is why we were surprised, because he never really ate a lot of junk food and things like that. Since his regimen with the insulin and his food intake, in these last few years, he's had a growth spurt, which is, like, phenomenal. Ooh. He's just gotten tall. He's still slim, but he's gotten that height that he was craving, mm-hmm. right? And so for him, it seemed as though having an undiagnosed condition may have slowed down his growth spurt at that time. But once things got regulated, it was boom. He never lost any friends. He was always one of these cool guys in any case. So he himself never felt as though he was not normal. As a matter of fact, we kind of looked at superpowers. Again, it's how we framed the situation. Okay. You know? Not everybody can do that. But in this particular case, we were able to. And I tell some other parents too who have a child with a diagnosis like that, to, you know, don't look at it in the negative point of view. Try to reframe it. Your child now has to pay more attention to what they do and how they do it. And they are ahead of the curve when it comes to a lot of other adolescents doing that, because for the most part, adolescents believe that they are totally invincible. Nothing will ever happen to them. They can do what they want. But the type 1 diabetic child who was aware knows that I can do what I want within reason. And that's what I have found in terms of my experience.
I was chuckling in the background there because I, you know, as a teenager, they're very fascinated with science fiction cartoons and such. Like, and I can imagine mm-hmm. a situation where they're measuring themselves like Dr. Bruce Banner and, you know, injecting themselves with this insulin, this superpower hormone that helps keep them literally live and functioning. You know, and you could frame it in a real interesting way to have a bit of fun with it, even though it's a challenging health and very deadly condition if it's not managed properly.
Exactly.
But living with diabetes is quite manageable for these youngsters. I think sometimes, and you can confirm for me, the parents have a little bit harder time managing it. We mentioned last week where the hopes and dreams of some of these parents are often shattered with the diagnosis, and then they struggle a little bit to come to grips with it. What kind of advice would you give us? And Dr. Michelle, you can jump in again and just reiterate some of those answers after Ms. Donna.
Sure. Okay. One of the first things I would want them to know is that your adolescent is still an adolescent. And along with all the other things, adolescents go through this transition, and this transition could be quite turbulent. Sometimes it's difficult to tell a mood swing from maybe low blood sugar or high blood sugar.
Right.
So you need to be aware of that. And again, that comes down to knowing your child. All right. Sometimes you will find that you think your child is sleeping too long. Adolescents need sleep. And even though you would really want to have them get up at 6 and take their insulin and be on time, it is normal for the adolescent to want to sleep for about 10 hours. Okay? Once the insulin is regulated properly, you may be able to have your child wake up, take the test, take something quick, and then go back and have a little nap. So you can adapt, but you need to know your child.
I find it amazing, right? That for young growing people that need so much sleep, they literally need it even without managing a condition like diabetes. For mm-hmm. someone that needs so much sleep, they don't go to sleep on time. They go to bed at all sorts of crazy hours.
And then they take all kinds of crazy hours, exactly, because they still want them 10 hours. Right? So they're going to stay up until 2, you know.
It's unbelievable. It's literally unbelievable. But I guess Ken can relate to that. You know, wanting to be out late at night, and I certainly wanted to be out late at night, even though I'm a bit of an early bird now. I'm rapidly turning into my father. I just realized that earlier this week. Yeah, but I am a bit of an early bird now, and I like to be in bed early and get early, early to bed, early to rise, that sort of thing. But as a former teenager, I can certainly relate to that. What other considerations? I mean, I can imagine socially it can be a bit of a challenge for most of us, for most teenagers who are living with diabetes. You mentioned that your own youngster is a pretty practical and pragmatic kind of fellow, but what kind of things have you come across?
Well, I found that other parents, his friends, very early in the game, we let everybody know what was going on. His friends visited him from in the hospital. So they understood where he was coming from. And I found that the parents of some of his friends were more nervous than his friends. So whenever there was a birthday party or get together at the beach, I'd get these calls. Do you think he'll be able to come? Does he have to bring his medication? What do we do if he gets sick? And I had to actually allay the fears of a lot of parents because they thought that, you know, he's going to disappear from my presence, come over to their presence, and then get sick, and something will happen, they'll be responsible. But what we would do with him is, especially at that stage, he would always make sure he ate before he left home. We knew what the time frames were. And at that early stage, he was basically on a very strict schedule with respect to meals and his snacks. As he got older and he got more, the process was much more regulated, and he's now more in charge of his insulin intake, where he will know how much insulin to take when he is eating certain types of carbs and things like that. He can decide what he wants to do and when he wants to do it. He already knows that he would prefer water to carbonated beverages. He knows that if he goes to a party, approximately how big a piece of cake he may be able to eat. And we have no more worries like that. He's just a normal adolescent doing everything that his friends are doing, everything that other young men are doing. But he also knows that for him to be able to process the food that he's eating, he needs to regulate that insulin intake.
Excellent. Does it leave any room for spontaneity at all?
Yes, it does. You see, all spontaneity does not have to do with food. That's the first thing.
That's a great point.
Right? And the second thing is...
You know that's very unlike Beijing culture, you know that?
Yeah.
Beijing culture, we celebrate some of everything with food, you know, and or we just eat for no reason whatsoever. And unfortunately, what we reach for to eat is often... things that may not be best for us, and particularly so if you're living with a chronic condition of whatever type. So please tell us a little bit more about the spontaneity that is involved in a type 1 teenage diabetic's life. I'm the parent of said child.
Yeah. Well, what he does is we always talk about being prepared. And in his case, being prepared is if you know that you're going to be leaving the house, regardless for if it's going to be 20 minutes or maybe 2 hours or maybe 4 hours, he has his pack. And his pack has an ice pack and his EpiPen. All right?
For the EpiPen? For allergies?
No, as in for his insulin.
Oh.
Ah, yes. They also come in pens.
So you mean one you just stick into your leg in case you need to deliver your insulin quickly?
Yeah, well, not in his leg only. His leg, his stomach, his arm, depending on where his rotation is for that day.
Right. And
I call it an EpiPen, but it's actually an insulin pen, not epinephrine.
Right.
I call it an EpiPen because it's just so simple. he would just turn the nozzle to get the number of units that he requires, and then it's in, pull, out. And that's it. He gives himself a shot, and he's good to go. So if, for example, they're supposed to be at playing tennis, And then afterwards, somebody says, well, let's go to Chassette. Well, you have his water. And if he decides that he feels like going to Chassette with them, because that's the other thing, he doesn't always go with everybody in the crowd. He does what he wants to do. You know, he will call and say, well, Mom, I'm going to Chassette. Can you pick me up from there? And then by the time he gets there, he would have realized that he had something to eat.
Right.
He is very good with it. No problem. He knows what he will have and what he won't have.
Okay,
right?
Doc.
That kind of spontaneity.
Doc, just some housekeeping here. Just want to make sure that my technology is good. Trudy, mm-hmm. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm listening.
Jason, are you with us?
Loud and clear, sir.
And both guests, are you with us, please?
We are all here.
Oh.
I'm here.
Okay, everybody's accounted for. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
Of course, listeners, you are listening to For the Health of It, in association of the Diabetes Association of Barbados. I'm Jason Bell. The previous voice you just heard is the sultry tones of the one and only Ken Husbands. And on the call this evening is Diabetes Association of Barbados President, Miss Trudy Griffith. Oh, my goodness. I'm tripping over my tongue. Miss Trudy Griffith. And we have Miss Donna, and she's a parent of a child with type 1 diabetes. And Dr. Michelle, she's a trainer of doctors and an internist, someone who can be of such great assistance, who has that medical background when it comes to managing diabetes. Trudy, you're back, and as we come on to the last 15 minutes of the program, what other things have come to your mind? I've had some really satisfying moments here on For the Health of It this evening, and last week as well, but what other things come to your mind?
Trudy, would you mind if I have a little word, because I just wanted to respond to something that Donna said, unless you had something you wanted to specifically add in.
All right, go ahead.
What do you say? No, I just wanted to congratulate Donna, because what she's telling you is that it's really the family that makes these children as sufficient and self-sufficient as Christopher. I'm sorry, I didn't want to say his name, but it's your son.
Sorry.
I was just a little slip.
His identity is now blown. This superhero needs to come to the rescue anyway.
He'll put on his garb.
He's put on his cape and keep it moving, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it is a great example. But go on, Dr. Michelle.
Yes, but a lot of the children who run into trouble come from dysfunctional families. And it is those families that give us the greatest difficulties, I'm sure as Donna would know, because many of these children, instead of being supported by their parents as they're going forward, like how Donna's son is, they're left to their own devices. And unfortunately, a 15, 16-year-old may be able to get up in the morning and cook his breakfast, but he still needs to be assisted through his diabetes control and management by helping him through some of the decisions that are harder to make.
Right.
So I think a dysfunctional family from the beginning makes a dysfunctional child, whether they have diabetes or not. And if you have a child with diabetes in a dysfunctional family, it's often a big disaster, because not only does adolescent normal angst come into play, but then they have the other things that we sort of mentioned earlier last week about addiction, use of smoking, illicit substances, alcohol use, risky behaviors, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that as you go forward thinking about this, many families are not as well adjusted. And I think that the ones who start off with diabetes younger and then go into adolescence with their diabetes are sometimes those families that fare worse, often because the children get tired of diabetes earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Early in the season, we discuss diabetes distress. Is it diabetic distress? Yes. When you just get tired and you just throw your hands up and say, well, what's the use? You know, And so there are echoes of that in what you were just describing. We have to recognize our privileges, you know. We are very blessed, some of us, to have both parents in the house. You know, we are both, some of us are privileged to have a supportive parent who sees us through whatever. And we have to recognize that not every household is the same. What resources are there available? And I'll leave any one of you two guests to lead this, the answer to this question. What resources are available, or what scenarios can you recall where you've had to help a parent or help a child living with diabetes type 1, or even type 2 for that matter, manage their condition effectively?
Well, when you get to secondary school level, every school has a guidance counselor. And
right.
One of the areas that a lot of students do have access to is discussing how they're feeling about their condition or about the impact of their condition on their social life with their guidance counselors. There are also lots of students who may have diabetes, whether they're type 1 or type 2, but that does not stop them from behaving less than stellar in school. And when they do get into trouble, sometimes what will happen is they will say, well, I can't be given detention because I'm diabetic and I have to go and get my food or I have to take medication. And sometimes people do not fully understand that and will say, well, you're just trying to trick me. So it's really important that every school year, at the beginning of the year, even though it is assumed that everyone should know that you, the child or your parents would let school know that you're diabetic, have something in writing from your doctor so that when something does happen, it is already on file. In that way, should there be an incident, all of the necessary agencies that have to deal with you, from the hospital to maybe even child care board, so social work, depending on what your situation is, they will have that information up front, right? And the other agency, too, that we, obviously the hospital with the child guidance, with Nurse Sobers, that is a very good resource for the whole family to help them understand not only the disease itself, the condition itself, but also how to attend to it properly.
Okay, so from the Diabetes Association's end, we mm-hmm. do have a number of programs that cater to children who have been diagnosed with diabetes, regardless of whether it's type 1 or type 2. It's called the Sponsor a Child with Diabetes Program, where we not only provide for the physical needs of the child in terms of supplies, insulin, et cetera, but we also pay for medical care and even visit to a psychologist, because we recognize that is integral to ensuring that the child and the family understands what is going on and get the necessary support.
Right, right. Excellent.
So I know we're drawing to a close, and I know Ken is going to butt in just now.
We got about 7 minutes.
I know we have.
My clock and my watch are working.
So therefore, I'm getting my comments in before Ken cuts us off.
I think you have a caller, Trudy. Yes.
Oh,
all right. Thank you for calling for the health of it, caller. Good evening.
Yeah.
Go right ahead, caller.
We're trying to get
for the health of it.
Oh, okay. All right, that wasn't for you. That was on the other show. Okay.
Okay. Oh, so what I'm certainly hearing regarding the comments that we've made in the last few minutes, that for every child who's been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, they certainly need a network around them, and not just the immediate family circle, but also extend to friends, to their teachers, to the healthcare team, etc. It certainly sounds as though that is what every child needs. Am I understanding mm-hmm. that correctly?
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
So,
and I'd like to add one more thing to this
you
as well.
Expand on that a little bit.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Lashley.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask.
Hello. Take this call, please.
Thanks for calling for the health of it. Caller, good evening.
Good evening. Hello. I want to ask the doctor, what's the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2?
Okay. I'll leave you to answer that, Dr. Michelle.
Yeah, that's a relatively easy, quick answer for the most part. However, in reality, it's not always so easy. Type 1, generally speaking, are children and young people who need insulin to manage their diabetes. Mm-hmm. And type 2 diabetes, generally speaking, are older persons who may not need insulin initially, but may have to go on insulin later if their diabetes is not controlled.
Okay.
The basis between the two of them is that one is more related to lifestyle and some genetics, and that's the type 2. And the type 1 diabetics are those people whose body and the organ called the pancreas stops making insulin, so they have no insulin to make at all, and they always need insulin. And this is as a result of abnormalities in their own immune system.
Okay.
Perfectly answered. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. All right, caller, does that satisfy you, ma'am? All right, I think the caller's right.
I think so.
All right.
Yeah. I had wanted to add something else there, too, about the social aspect of adolescence.
Absolutely.
You know, boyfriend's going to want to have girlfriends, girlfriend's going to want to have boyfriends, you know, and sometimes having the diabetes makes that particular individual wonder if, you know, they are really going to be able to keep somebody. Sometimes they want to hide it. They don't want anyone to know. And then especially when you've gotten to that point where you can actually say, I'm in love with somebody. Although teenagers seem to be in love every 2 weeks or something. But when they're in love, they then feel as though I can share this information, you know, with my person I'm in love with. And not every adolescent is willing to be a part of, you know, seeing a good friend of theirs taking shots and all of that. And sometimes what they fail to realize is that it's just not because of your diabetes. It's because you are adolescent, and boys and girls tend to be in and out of relationships very fast. So sometimes they will blame the diabetes, and they will get really frustrated. Because if I didn't have the stupid diabetes, I would have had that person or the next person. So sometimes you have to kind of talk them out of that way of thinking.
Psychosocial factors come up again, Dr. Michelle.
Yes, at all. This is really the make and break of diabetes.
Indeed, mm-hmm. It is. And with a couple minutes left, we want to invite you, dear listener, to continue to listen to For the Health of It on VOB929.com. If you miss part or all of this program, you can listen to the replays, previous episodes, on the podcast section of the website. You can also give the Diabetes Association Barbados a call directly. Call 423-427-9338. I hope I got that right from the top of my head. 423. All right, yeah. 230-2975 is the cell number to call. Or you can email dab40a@gmail.com, and bare your soul with us and tell us about all these psychosocial factors that are affecting you. Even if you have a challenge with a child, even if you have a challenge with yourself as a person living with diabetes, maybe you've been recently diagnosed, maybe you have some questions to ask, maybe you are living with or love someone who has this interesting condition, and want to know how you can best live and love for the health of it. I want to thank, with the 1 minute left, the wonderful guest on the call, Dr. Michelle. You came on the call yet again and gave us that wonderful medical advice. I appreciate that so much. And Ms. Donna, we really appreciate you giving your perspective from personal experience dealing with your youngster, how he has been managing living with this condition. And, of course, And I'll leave Trudy to finish the program. We want to thank the President of Diabetes Association of Barbados for championing the show these past 3 months. Can you believe it's been 3 months since we've been on air, Trudy? And it's been quite a run so far.
Yes, it has. I believe that it has been an interesting undertaking for the association. Persons have been calling us at the office and asking questions. They've been talking about the topics that we have discussed on the program. And I know that some persons may want to even share some information or even request particular topics going forward. So we will share with you next week in terms of how you can get in touch with us and let us know what you want us to discuss, because we want to make sure that we provide the information that you need for the health of it. Good evening, Barbados.
Thank you very much. And Voice of Barbados, you've been listening to For the Health of It. Listen again next Tuesday evening at 8:30 for another edition.